Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
yes, we did. We dug into the ground and we started to burn many things we found. That's the wonderful Dar Williams singing with Pete Seeger and David Burns, our theme song, the Solartopia song with the Rivertown Kids, from the album Tomorrow's Children, Grammy-winning album Tomorrow's Children. We're back for another hour of the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show. We have a fantastic guest today, one of the most impressive people I've come across, actually, in the world of alternative healing, Dr. Thomas Lodi. Dr. Lodi, are you with us?
I am.
Very good. Dr. Lodi, I want to compliment you on your website and also on your videos. Very impressive. You're not really 57 years old, are you?
No, I'm 61.
61. Okay, well, your photograph makes you look like about 35, so... I assume that's what you look like and not a Photoshop.
Right. No.
Good.
For real.
So you are treating many diseases, many illnesses. Why don't I let you talk about your own clinic here? Your background is quite impressive. You've been practicing medicine for more than two decades. You were a clinical psychologist in Hawaii for many years. You graduated from the School of Medicine there in the 85. And you were a clinical fellow at Columbia University. And quite a storied career. And now you have a clinic in Mesa, Arizona, the Oasis of Healing Clinic. And I should tell you, we did a show from the Oasis of Hope in Tijuana, Mexico, a month or two ago. Where I went and spent about a week, the cancer healing clinic of Dr. Contreras. Are you familiar with them?
Yes.
And I was quite impressed by their operation. I've not been to your clinic in Mesa, Arizona. So rather than just do a poor paraphrasing, tell us, please, what you do at the Oasis of Healing in Mesa, Arizona, and how you differ from other clinics.
Sure. I used to do pretty much very similar in New York, and then I moved here in 2004. Part of the reason, or maybe perhaps not the part, maybe the whole main reason I moved here was because in Arizona, if you're a medical doctor, an MD, and you know homeopathy, then you can be licensed under the homeopathic board, and the benefit of that is that you can do anything you would do as an MD. You know, you're licensed to do anything you do, and more. So, whereas in New York, I was continually being spending hours in front of the board of medical examiners explaining why I did, you know, vitamin C and ozone and all these things and defending it, and you know, just, you know, sleepless nights and all that sort of thing. Instead of having to do that, I can just practice. So, because here, if the hospitals, and it's usually the hospitals that complain about this kind of work, and
healing work that doesn't involve large corporate profits.
Exactly.
Okay.
If you decided not to poison people, then they're going to try to get rid of you. So
as long as you're poisoning people, you're good.
You're okay.
You're medicalized.
Right.
That's what,
what they call standard of scare, or they call it care.
Uh-huh.
It's really standard of scare.
But you are a full-on MD.
Yeah, full-on medical doctor. I did my residency at Columbia in internal medicine, and I got after completing that, I went and did urgent care and ICUs and CCUs. I pretty much worked in urgent or critical situations because we have, even in the allopathic world, the medical doctor world, we have resolution. You know, it's either they're going to go one way or another. But as far as taking care of chronic disease,
you either live or die.
Right, you either live or die. But
right.
in the world of chronic conditions, the medical doctors are useless.
I want to get a quote on that, because that's a pretty hot topic to lead an hour on. In the world of clinical doctors, in the world of chronic conditions, clinical doctors are useless?
Medical doctors, yeah.
Medical doctors are pretty much useless.
MDs are useless because, in fact, they're more than, they're not just useless, they're actually damage. Because the thing is this, here you've got a condition that is, the underlying pathology in all disease is chronic inflammation. Inflammation is the way the body heals. You know, you bang your finger with a hammer and it gets red hot, swollen, and painful, which are the four cardinal signs of inflammation. And within a day or two, you're back to normal, you have full mobility of your joint, everything's back to normal. That inflammatory response was how you healed. Now, if you keep banging your finger, it turns into a chronic inflammatory response, which is damaging. But just to give you an idea, if you were to take, I want to draw a line here and show you that chronic inflammation is even the underlying cause of cancer.
Let's stop with that dreaded word. You actually treat cancer patients at Mesa. At your Oasis of Healing, is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
And how's your success rate?
Excellent. Excellent.
How long have you been treating cancer patients?
Oh, probably now about 15 years.
15 years. So I should tell you, and our listeners know this, I've had a major focus on cancer on this show. A year ago, June, I turned up with a major tumor in my lung, which after 9 months of investigation, it actually may not actually be in my lung, but it turned out not to be cancer. But it was quite an excursion, and that's one of the focuses, or foci, of this show, is on cancer. And we've had some remarkable people. Dr. Nick Gonzalez, who you mentioned in your one of your articles. Tanya Pierce, who wrote Outsmart Your Cancer. Dan Kenner, who wrote an excellent book on treating cancer. Dr. Bernie Siegel, of course, who people know of love medicine and healing, whatever. And also we've talked with, I did two shows with Dr. Alan Goldhammer, from the True North, Fasting Center in Santa Rosa, California. So I'm sure you're familiar with these folks.
Mm-hmm.
And you're following in great footsteps here, and we do talk very explicitly about natural cures for cancer or natural ways to manage cancer, let's put it that way. And you do this at Mesa, and you've got 15 years, so tell us how you've done and what you've done, please.
Right. Well, when I went back into, when I left the conventional setting out of urgent care and critical care, and I went into, I wanted to learn modalities of treatment that I hadn't learned in medical school, and I went to Japan, I studied with Charlie Farr, who's an MD, PhD, who worked on, he was actually nominated for the Nobel Prize in 92 for his work on hydrogen peroxide. And I did that, and I went to Europe. I went all over the world, and I gathered enough training on my own. And then I set up my practice in New York, and that's where I started out, and moved here because of the licensing laws are a lot more kinder. Here,
right.
I can do whatever I want. So pretty much, you know, I mean, as long as it's, as long as it makes sense. So
right, and you being in Arizona, as long as you don't look Hispanic, you'll be okay.
Right.
Okay.
And L.A. is pretty much.
Yeah.
I went back to visit L.A. and I couldn't read the signs. You know, it's crazy. So, but anyway, I narrowed in on oncology because actually I was going to start an oncology fellowship, or I did start an oncology fellowship after residency, and I was going to do it because I've always been interested in cancer, but I couldn't do it. I couldn't damage people, and I saw what they did was they give high-dose chemo radiation, and we'd see someone walk in relatively healthy, and I knew within 2 weeks they'd look like they were from Auschwitz, you know, and I couldn't do that, so I didn't do that, and then that's when I went into the critical care and all that sort of thing.
Interesting. Well, let me, because we tend to lose, the hour flies by when we lose stuff, and very importantly, in reading through your materials, your article and your website, you do use chemotherapy at your clinic. Can you explain how you do that differently from mainstream treatment?
Yeah. Well, let me just give you an overview of what we do.
Okay, please do. But we want to come to that. It's very, very important and very interesting how you have adapted chemotherapy to your natural-based cures.
Right, which is why we consider this integrative rather than alternative. We integrate the best of all the healing arts. So Anyway, the program has three pillars that we bring and one pillar the person has to bring. The three pillars that we do, number one, we teach the person to stop making cancer. Because really, consider this, no matter, most people, unless the tumor is compressing a vital function like breathing or eating or bowel movements or causing extreme pain, unless that's happening and it's all theoretical. You're told, well, you got this lump on your pancreas or you got this mass in your colon. You know, you say, oh, okay, well, wow, I don't feel anything. So most people have that, or they have an obvious mass on their breast. But here's the thing. If not one more cell was reproduced in the cancer, if you didn't grow one more cancer cell, you could live out a normal life. So really, the question that people have when they come to us is not, how do I get rid of this? The question is, how do I stop making this? How do I stop making cancer? And that's the real question. And if you can stop making it, well, then you're done. And on the other hand, it doesn't matter how good anyone is at getting rid of it if you continue to make it. So the guy with lung cancer that's from smoking who continues to smoke, well, it really doesn't matter if how good you are getting rid of it, it's going to be back. So that's the idea. So we teach people to stop making cancer. Simultaneously, we target it and eliminate it without harm or causing very minimal harm. And then thirdly, we enhance the immune system and get it back on track, because when anyone has a manifestation, the clinical manifestation of cancer, it means that in one way or another, their immune system was overwhelmed. And so now we need to get it back up doing its job, because its job is to keep you cancer-free. That's one of the things.
If I understand correctly, and of course this has come up with our other guests, the other doctors who've talked with us about cancer, we all have cancer all the time, and the immune system is what keeps it in balance. And if stop me if I'm wrong. And as you say, the third pillar of your treatment is to restore the immune system to the point where it can keep cancer under control. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Okay. And then the sooner we do that, the sooner you can leave. You don't have to be here, because as soon as the immune system can take back over, it can do the job much better than we can. It does it on a very microscopic level, from in ways that we can't even comprehend. So it is the only way to really deal with it. So, but now going back to your question, and then the fourth thing that has to come is this: the person has to know they're going to heal, and that's what I call faith. Faith is not believing. Faith is knowing. And I'll give you a really good example. You're slicing an apple this evening and you slice your finger by mistake. Well, you don't believe it's going to heal. You know it's going to heal. Well, it's that level of knowing. Because what is faith? Faith is when you know something is going to happen. It hasn't happened yet, but you know it's going to happen. Okay? How do you know? There's not, you don't believe, you know. And it's a very, very subtle but profound difference. So when you know you're going to heal, and we do all these three things, now you've got the fourth pillar, and the foundation for your healing is well established.
So part of your oasis of healing is to instill in people the belief that they will heal and they will get better.
The knowledge.
More than the belief, the knowledge.
Well, you can only believe in things that aren't true. You can believe in Santa Claus, you can believe in tooth fairies. You don't believe in trees, and you don't believe in rocks. You either know about trees, or you don't. Or you know about rocks, or you don't.
Uh-huh.
So we know about things that are real, or we believe things that are not real. It's just that I just like to define terms so that we're all on the same page. But anyway, it's a knowing, and it's called faith. And when you have that pillar, then everything we do works. But as far as targeting, and that's what you were talking about with the chemo, how do we target the cancer? We target the cancer by understanding what cancer is. And cancer basically is like all of the conditions that we call diseases. They are processes that the body is going through to save our lives. You know, if you have high blood pressure, that's not a problem. That's curing a problem. The reason I'm saying that is because the body has an infinite wisdom, and it says, wait a minute, the arteries are blocked. I can't get the blood to the organs like I need to, because the arteries are kind of clogged up, because this guy doesn't know how to eat right and take care of himself, so I got to increase the blood pressure here to get blood to all the organs. So it increased the blood pressure. Well, is that the problem? No, the problem is why the body had to do that. And we have to realize the body's never making a mistake. You're going to the doctor and you're told, so what do? Do we lower the blood pressure artificially with a drug? No, that's not going to accomplish anything. That's like you're driving in your car and a red light comes flashing on the dashboard and you grab a hammer out of the glove compartment, smash it, and go back to driving. You know, you didn't take care of the problem. You know, your car is going to break down the road. And that's exactly what's happening when we look at the research over 35 years of giving people antihypertensive medications. We find out there's big problems. So what do? You remove the reason why. So you change your diet, lifestyle cleanse, and all of a sudden your arteries open up and your body no longer needs to do the high blood pressure dance. In chemo, with cancer, what happens is that the most vulnerable parts of a cell are called the mitochondria. Those are the parts of the cell where oxygen and glucose are brought together to produce energy. And wherever there's oxygen, you've got, it's highly flammable, as you can imagine. And on a biochemical, in biochemical terms, it's highly flammable and produces free radicals. So these are very, very vulnerable little organelles inside of the cell. Well, if your cells are surrounded by toxins because you live in the United States of America, then you are, and especially if you live in an urban setting, your cells are continually being bombarded, and in fact, a lot of the times the cells can't even engage in their normal activities. They have to engage in defensive activities, you know, because they're getting holes in their membranes and all that. But anyway, when enough mitochondria are beaten down and the cell can no longer use oxygen, it has a choice. It can either die, which is not a good option, or it can go into a default mode of energy production called fermentation. And that's what we call cancer. Cancer is a primitive, fermentative, metabolic attempt, a response in an attempt to save the life of the person. Because if it didn't, that little lump in the breast would turn black and it would fall off. The person would become septic and die. That colon would turn black. So in order for that not to happen, the body does a dance called cancer. So what do we have to do? Attack it? No, we need to remove the reason why the body has to do that. Because remember, the body is not stupid and it's not making mistakes.
Right. We're talking with Dr. Thomas Lodi of the Oasis of Healing Clinic, founder of the Oasis of Healing Clinic in Mesa, Arizona. You just said, actually, a pretty amazing thing, and I've read this in another book. The title escapes me, maybe you remember. It's the only book I've read. The title is that cancer is not a disease, basically, and his thesis is that cancer forms when cells try to surround toxic poisoning, and that they're, you know, they're a qualitatively different kind of cell from the rest of the body because they need to be to keep this toxic substance under control. Now, you've just said something very similar, unless I misunderstood you. The cancer does form a positive function in the body by sort of corralling toxicity. Is that a correct assumption?
Well, it's a little different. What's happening is the toxicity has forced the cell into a default mode of energy production. Because remember, no energy, no function. So the cells need to function, otherwise they're going to die. And if you get a massive die-off of cells, it's what we call necrosis. It gets black. It becomes a nidus for infection. You get bacteria in there. You get bacteria in your blood, and you get very, very sick. It's called sepsis. And, you know, you don't want that to happen. So the cell goes into a default mode of energy production. I'll give you an example which you can easily relate to. You're running. You're a runner, and you get up in the morning and you go for a run, and you've been running 20 minutes, and fine, at about 30 or 40 minutes, or let's say an hour, depending on how long you've been running, you're going to start getting aches and pains in your legs, and it's time to stop because you've reached your maximum. Why are you getting aches and pains? Because you've gotten to the point where you've hit your aerobic threshold. You can no longer use enough oxygen. Your body's not in shape enough to use that oxygen to burn the glucose. And so what happens is you go into anaerobic respiration, which produces lactic acid. So the pain in your legs is lactic acid. That lactic acid is a result of fermentation. Your body is fermenting the glucose instead of burning it efficiently with oxygen. So we all go into that all the time. And if you're lifting weights and you got a lot of pain because you're at the end, that's because you're producing lactic acid. So lifting weights really is an anaerobic process, and running is an aerobic process, but you will reach a point where you lose your ability. So
cancer, which is anaerobic, right? These cells. Why don't you proceed with that?
Right. So what anaerobic means is that here. First of all, aerobic means that one molecule of glucose and one molecule of oxygen enter the mitochondria, and they go through the process, the Krebs cycle, and they produce 38 ATPs. ATPs are little packages of energy. Okay, that's pretty efficient for one molecule of glucose. Now, in fermentation, where you don't have oxygen, you take one molecule of glucose and it gets turned into only two ATPs. So 2 times 19 is 36, 38. So basically, a cancer cell is 19 times less efficient at energy production. Therefore, in order to survive, it needs 19 times more fuel or more glucose, which is why it is said that cancer feeds on glucose. And it's why we do PET scans. If we do a PET scan, we inject radioactive glucose, fluorodeoxyglucose, into the blood. Then you scan the person, and you can see if there's a rapid uptake in the liver and rapid uptake in the adrenal glands. You can say, aha, he has metastasis in these two organs. So it's looking at the rate of sugar uptake, which tells us whether or not it's cancer. So when a doctor says it doesn't matter what you eat, it's crazy. It's like saying water runs uphill. You know.
Yeah.
So
let's really quickly now, since I mentioned that you do use chemo at your otherwise natural-based center in Mesa, Arizona. We're talking with Dr. Thomas Lodi of the Oasis of Healing Center in Mesa, Arizona. If the cancer cells need 19 times as much glucose as a regular cell to survive, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I've read in your article and on your website that cancer cells have enhanced or additional insulin intake mode.
Right.
And what you do with chemo, and I think you're not the only one to do this, is you do an integrated therapy where you combine the chemo at one-tenth the normal dose, or one-tenth the corporate dose, let's put it that way,
mm-hmm.
with insulin.
Exactly.
And then the cancer cell, which is sucking up insulin like crazy, takes in the chemo as well and dies. Is that correct?
Absolutely. That's pretty much it. Because, you know, think of this. The cancer cell needs 19 times more glucose. Well, how's it going to get that? Well, it has to upregulate and grow onto its surface extra insulin receptors because, you know, insulin opens the door that lets glucose in. So it's got all these extra insulin receptors, and so now it's going to respond much quicker. So someone with cancer goes to sleep at night. They wake up in the morning. They haven't eaten. And let's say they eat two bananas and a big glass of orange juice. Well, their blood sugar shoots up. Pancreas makes insulin. Cancer cells grab them first, open their doors first, and they eat first. So it's a survival mechanism of cancer. All we do is exploit that and turn it into a Trojan horse. You come in, you haven't eaten, we give you a small amount of insulin, you know, we calculate the dose based on body weight, and then in about 20 minutes we know all the cancer cells are totally open wide like little baby chicks in a nest with their mouths open, and we take 10% of the chemo and give it. And as soon as we do, then we give glucose right behind it, IV glucose. And what does that do? It slams the door shut. So you kind of open the door, introduce the chemo, it goes only into the cancer cells, and then you slam the door shut. It's been around since 1933.
How does it work? Does it work well? What's your success rate?
Incredible. Well, yeah, I'm saying, I would say, you know, in all stages of cancer, from 1 to 4, I would say around 70% of people that come here leave with either no or very little cancer. Now, whether or not they stay that way depends on how well we taught them to live a cancer-free life. Because that's really, remember, we were talking about that before, that's the foundational and fundamental thing that someone learns here, is how do you stop making cancer?
You know, okay, now, I've had an email, Dr. Lodi, and it's a very intriguing one, from someone with ocular melanoma. Now, ocular melanoma is treated with radiation generally, not with chemo. How do you deal with ocular melanoma and other cancers, perhaps, that are not treated with chemo but are treated generally with radiation?
Well, yeah, then there are cancers that are, in other words, they have not been able to find the right chemotherapy for them. And what that means is really this. See, chemo is poison. If you pour it on your finger, well, you're going to burn a hole. You know, that's why we have to wear these special purple gloves, you know, when we administer it. So it's a poison. So it's not a matter of whether or not this is going to kill the cancer cell. What happens is, in order to get enough of it into the cancer cell, you're going to usually overwhelm the person first. So there are cancers like sarcomas, ocular melanomas. Sometimes there are rectal melanomas. There are melanomas, you know, the melanomas that you can't even see can do that. And a lot of the sarcomas. In other words, in order to get enough chemo in there, you'd wind up killing the person first, so they don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
The beauty of insulin is insulin opens the door that the cancer cell can't afford to close. It's their survival door. And so you can open that up and just give a little 10% and do it. The problem with radiation is that radiation never stops. That's why if you aim it in, even if they have, you know, they have a very, you know, they have a cyber knife type radiation where they're coming in and cutting it very precisely, it doesn't stop. It goes right through. Like if I'm aiming at it for one spot on my in my body, it's going to go through that spot and go out the other end. That's why I'm. That's why they have the room encased with lead, and that's why the radiation oncologist is wearing a red lead apron and two doors away. So because this stuff doesn't stop, so it doesn't matter how well you can focus it in on there, it's going to cause collateral damage, and it's called ionizing radiation, which means it. And it just doesn't stop. So,
correct. And I should let you know that a big focus of this show is the fact I've been fighting for 40 years against nuclear power. I usually do an update at the beginning of the show on nuclear power, but I wanted to get you going here. And you live somewhat near the Palo Verde nuclear plants, the three reactors, and near Phoenix, and hopefully we'll get those shut soon. Those, of course, produce tons of ionizing radiation, and we want them shut as soon as we possibly can. But Dr. Lodi, do you treat ocular melanoma and other forms of cancer that where chemo is not generally used?
Yes, yes.
And how do you do that? How do you treat ocular melanoma?
Well, number one, we totally cleanse the body. Remember, we have to realize that the body will do its job. What's happened, the reason that a melanoma or any sarcoma or cancer has emerged is because the immune system's been overwhelmed. If we can get the immune system back up, we can clean out all the debris so that the body is not... Just consider this. The immune system is the Department of Defense and the Department of Maintenance. And so if it's overwhelmed with maintenance duties, it doesn't have the resources for defense. And that's pretty much what happens. So if you clean the body out, clean the colon, clean the lymphatics, do a juice feast so that you clean out all the interstitial fluids, now you've got a pristine, beautiful biochemistry, and you get the immune system where it's going to pretty much do the job because that's what it can do better than anyone. But we can add in a little bit of chemo low-dose chemo with...
Well, of course, there are many, many different kinds of chemo. I assume you have certain chemotherapeutic chemicals or formulas that you use as opposed to others.
Yeah, and in fact, I use the same that is used in oncology. You know, I have the same books, the same, you know, clinical trials, and but basically the truth that I know, the reason I will use, you know, like the combination of taxotere and carbo for metastatic breast cancer is because insurance will pay for that. But in truth, I could give the old standard adriamycin, cytoxin, methotrexate, and 5-FU, which have been around since the 50s, 60s. You know, they've been around for a long time. But, and they'll work just as well because a poison is a poison is a poison.
Well, do you have any organic poisons? Any of these non-corporate?
We do those. And some people who refuse chemo altogether, and we get phenomenal results. The only reason I use the IPT mainly is if I have an advanced
That's integrated. IPT is integrated.
Oh, insulin potentiation therapy.
Insulin potentiation therapy.
Yeah, for the low-dose chemo. The only reason we use that at all is if someone has an advanced stage 3 or 4 and the tumor burden is too high or we really feel like we need to really move quickly, we'll do that. Otherwise, we use the high doses of ascorbates, which are vitamin C, and they stimulate the production of hydrogen peroxide within cells. Cancer cells don't have an enzyme called catalase, so they cannot convert it into water and oxygen, whereas healthy cells can. So
well, hydrogen peroxide can kill a cancer cell, but not a normal cell. Is that what
you're saying? Well, because the normal cell has catalase. It'll convert that hydrogen peroxide into water and oxygen. And the reason it has catalase is because it's an aerobic cell. Remember, it's not anaerobic, and so it's used to getting these oxidative byproducts, which hydrogen peroxide is. So it has an enzyme. Cancer cells have given up that mode, and they're now anaerobic, so they no longer have catalase. So that's why they're vulnerable to it. The same thing with high doses of sodium selenite, which is a form of selenium. Selenium, as we know, is a nutrient that's necessary for living. But in a specific form, the selenite, it's preferentially picked up by tumors, and it produces a superoxide anion. And again, cancer cells don't have an enzyme called superoxide dismutase, so they can't take care of it. Healthy cells do. So these two therapies are, they specifically kill cancer cells, and they're good for the healthy cells. So they're the perfect chemotherapy. And we use that.
We're at the bottom of the hour here at 2:31. Okay. We're going to have to take a short break. No, no, you're doing great. You're a superb guest. We have a great science lesson here. I want to ask you about the German treatments, hyperthermia, mistletoe, and of course you use vitamin C as well. So let's return and talk about your clinic and in relation to the German treatments. We're talking with Dr. Thomas Lodi of the Oasis of Healing, Mesa, Arizona. Very, very interesting on cancer and other healing. We'll be back right after this break. We're back. That's my buddy Dana Lyons singing the Solartopia song. Dana of Cows with Guns fame. We're talking with Dr. Thomas Lodi, founder of the Oasis of Healing Clinic in Mesa, Arizona, talking about the mechanics of cancer, actually. We haven't really gotten to your clinic, and particularly in terms of what you do, but I do have an email that someone is asking about DMSO. Do you use DMSO? She particularly citing the Camelot Cancer Care of Oklahoma, where they use natural things as well. Do you use DMSO, and what is its role in fighting cancer?
Yeah, DMSO is very important. I don't use it with the insulin with the low-dose chemo, but I use it when I'm not doing that, because DMSO has the ability to help permeate all tissues. And one of the things it does, one of its most important qualities, is that it is a powerful anti-inflammatory. You know, it was originally used for horses. You know, when they would run races, they would rub it on their hips so their hips wouldn't get inflamed afterwards. So it's the dimethyl succinic sulfoxide. And it is a real powerful anti-inflammatory, and it drives things into the body, so it's used as a driver too. So if you put, let's say, a bioidentical hormone on your skin, like testosterone, and then put some DMSO with it, it would push it right through the skin.
Well,
so
apparently they use it with vitamin C and vitamin B17 or Laetril.
Yeah.
Have you done that?
Yeah. And you got to be careful when you use DMSO that you washed the skin off.
Not feeling good? Okay, well, that's interesting. So
But one of the things I want to say about it is keep in mind that, remember I was saying cancer is an inflammatory process. If you take a sample of the cytokines and interleukins that are being produced in a healing wound, and you take a sample of the cytokines and interleukins being produced in a tumor, they're the same. They both stimulate angiogenesis. They both stimulate tissue proliferation. Well, those are really important in a healing wound, but not so fun in a tumor. But that just shows you that basically they're both chronic inflammatory conditions. You know, and so you really want that to happen in a wound. I mean, they're inflammatory conditions. In a wound, it's an acute situation. In a tumor, it's good. So cancer.
Well, wait, in a tumor, it's what?
In a tumor, it's a chronic condition. It's been going on for a long time.
I see. Okay.
So that's why cancer has been called in the past the wound that wouldn't heal.
Uh-huh.
And that's basically what it is. So it's not a problem. It's the body protecting itself. So, but yeah, DMSO is very important. So in someone who's got a lot of metastases all over the body, or they have brain metastases, intravenous DMSO will help really shrink those things down. It's very
so you can important. Actually take it. DMSO also goes internally as well as externally?
Correct. You can give it IV.
Well, where does Laetril fit in all this? Now, Laetril, of course, vitamin B17 from apricot pits, among, I guess that's the major source is apricot pits. Is that correct?
Yeah.
In Laetril? Do you use Laetril at your clinic, and what is the role of Laetril in fighting cancer in general?
It's very good. It's very good. It's been around for years. It's definitely proven it's safe and effective. It's found, one of the things that it's really, it seems to be extremely powerful is in triple negative breast cancer, you know, where they don't have the estrogen receptors, the progesterone receptors, or the HER2 receptors. And, you know, those notoriously in the conventional world, triple negative breast cancer has a poorer prognosis than triple positive or at least estrogen positive. And that's only because they have drugs associated with those receptors. That's the only reason why in their world.
You mean in the allopathic corporate world?
Yeah. So, but anyway, but Laetril, it works really, really good in that in those kinds of breast cancers. And also most of the reproductive tract tumors, so ovarian, uterine, fallopian tube, cervical, prostate, you know, it works especially well. It also works in almost any cancer, so I would always use it adjunctively, but especially with those.
Well, Dan, I want to return. I do have a dear friend who has a tumor in her eye. How about optical melanomas, ocular melanomas? Does Laetrile work for them?
Yes, yes, yeah, absolutely. And remember, we want to use Laetrile is or B17 is another way to non-toxically target cancer and harm cancer. It really doesn't harm other cells. So if you're using that, you're using a high dose of ascorbate, you're using the sodium selenite, and you're using the low dose IPT. You can also the other things that we use are ozone, peroxide, ultraviolet light. You know, all these ways are oxidative therapies that stimulate the oxidative process. And what is oxidation? Oxidation is the method by which the immune system removes or eliminates cancer cells, viruses, funguses, and bacteria. So it oxidizes them. And that's like what they used to call when I was in medical school, the respiratory burst. We didn't quite understand it in those days. And now we came to understand the respiratory burst is really the white blood cells producing hydrogen peroxide. So, very interesting.
Well, I thought Laetrile was illegal in the United States.
Well, the way it works is it's not. There's a compassionate use clause. And what it means is that if the person brings it in and asks the doctor to administer it, he can. But the doctor can't order it for the patient.
The person has to bring it. The patient has to bring in the Laetrile?
Right.
Where do they get it?
Well, they can get it a lot of places. You can go online. You can get it. You can get it from Mexico. It's easy. It's all around. You know. So
the doctor can't order it. The patient has to bring it in.
Well, we can. You can. But you're putting yourself at a little bit of risk by doing that. Because then, you know, if a person comes in and says, you see, like it's just like with Coley's toxin. Coley's toxin is you cannot initiate treatment. But if someone has a treatment initiated outside of the country, like in Argentina or wherever, Brazil, then they, and as long as they've had it initiated, then they can order a bunch of the toxin and bring it in, and we can administer it. We can continue.
So if my lung tumor turned out to be cancer, I had to go to get Coley's toxin or Laetrile, some of the other things. I have to go outside the country, like to Mexico, which I did, to Tijuana, and then start the treatment there, and then I can come back to the United States and continue it?
Yeah.
Wow, that's brilliant. Okay.
God
love our FDA. Sorry, go ahead.
I said one of the reasons I like Arizona is because it's not completely that way. We can initiate B17 as long as someone brings it to us.
So it's not federal law; it's usually state law that is the problem here.
Yeah, it's not really a law. There's no real law passed. It's not a legislative, law that has been passed. There's nothing on the books that says it. It's really considered out of the standard of care. Yeah, it's not really a specific law about it. It's not like you're breaking a law, because if you're breaking a law, it is criminal, and then you'd be in trouble. But that's not the case. It's just sort of on their there's a medication that is basically intravenous milk thistle that is in the German pharmacopoeia.
Yeah.
So I could now basically it's used for Amanita phalloides when people eat the death cat mushroom and they have fulminant liver failure and they're dead within 72 hours.
Oof.
So they have this intravenous milk thistle over there and they can reverse it. It's an IV. So it's milk thistle, which we know is good for the liver. So if I want to get it for a patient here, I write the prescription, I send it to the German pharmacist, he'll mail it over under that patient's name. So that's another way. Each thing has a different way. Each drug or each treatment has a different way in which we can make it, legal. So that way it'll come over and I can administer it. I love that one because we don't have intravenous milk thistle. We just have the oral. But, because here we do liver transplants. Over there,
you do surgery at your...
No. I mean, here in America, they wouldn't something like milk thistle. They would transplant the liver, which is crazy.
It is crazy. So you can actually take milk thistle and not have to get a liver transplant.
Right.
So Mickey Mantle, the baseball player, if he had stopped drinking alcohol and started drinking milk thistle, he wouldn't have had to jump in line and get somebody else's liver. and then it would,
exactly. Well, there's that with not only the intravenous milk thistle, but alpha lipoic acid intravenously. Really phenomenal stuff. I mean, we're even seeing liver cancers go away. We're seeing cirrhosis from hepatitis go away. I mean, it's just pretty amazing what alpha lipoic acid can do.
But what is it again?
Alpha lipoic acid.
Now, where does that come from? What's the root of that? Does that have an herbal root?
Yeah. It's
found in nature. Let's put it that way.
Well, yeah, we make it. Our bodies make it, but we don't make enough of it. And you get it in. It's in all kinds of foods. It's basically a powerful antioxidant. It's like vitamin C, is what it is.
Amazing.
And it turns out that with liver, it actually allows the liver to regenerate. Because in fact, there's a Dr. Berkson who's out of New Mexico. He's an MD, PhD. And,
he's cited in on your website there. Somewhere.
Right. When he was working in originally when he came out, and here he is, both a scholar and a physician, and he was working with people that had cirrhosis, advanced cirrhosis, and he was using alpha lipoic acid. The head of the transplant team came to him and said, "Hey, you got to stop this. You're ruining our transplant program."
Well, that's the FDA for you. Business first, you know, corporate medicine. The law of the United States is that a corporation's primary and sole purpose is to make money. And if a corporation can make $20 more by killing you, they are bound by law to do that. We're with Dr. Thomas Lodi, a superbly interesting science lesson here, Dr. Lodi. Thank you so much. I've got another email asking you to talk about how your treatment compares to what goes on in Germany. Now, in Germany, my understanding, I've read a couple books on it, that they use hyperthermia. They mm-hmm. superheat the body. They use various herbs from mistletoe. They do IV vitamin C and some other things. How does your treatment in Mesa, Arizona compare to what goes on in Germany, and how do the results compare?
Well, first of all, there's nowhere I know other than non-medically oriented places that help you learn how to stop making cancer, except for places like the Hippocrates and Wigmore. You know, there are places like that that are dedicated to just that, but they don't have the other side of it. So, you know, we have that. That's where I think we're distinguished. And we use almost every therapy we can interventionally to target and eliminate the cancer and stimulate the immune system. We use almost everything that anyone would use. The only thing we haven't used is hyperthermia, and that's only because I don't have enough room. As soon as we expand and I have the room, I will. Now, there's two ways of doing hyperthermia, the way it's done in Germany and the way that it's done in Japan. I prefer the Japanese way. In Germany, they'll take you up to a lethal dose of hyperthermia, which basically produces cellular death, cancer cell. And remember, cancer cells are not as they cannot tolerate heat the way our healthy cells can, or normal
cells.
What's
the differential? What temperature do you go to kill cancer cells?
40,
and then
42,
what temperature will kill you?
Yeah, 42 centigrade is 107.6.
That's for killing cancer.
Yeah, and that's pretty putting you out on the edge, but it'll kill the cancer for sure, and it'll keep you dangling for a little while, but you'll be able to tolerate it and come back. I kind of don't like that. We go to what they do in Japan is they go anywhere from 40 to 41.5.
41.5 Fahrenheit
of centigrade.
Well,
41.5 is 106.7. Okay, so it's a little bit lower, but it's significant because here's the difference. Instead of killing the cancer cell, what it does is it's a sublethal dose. So it instead stimulates the nuclei of the cancer cells, all cells actually, to produce what are called heat shock proteins. Now, heat shock proteins are produced and they go and they serve as chaperones carrying around proteins. But the other most important thing that they do is they stimulate the proliferation of mitochondria. Now, how do we know this? Well, there's a Dr. Tsuneo Kobayashi in Tokyo who I trained with. And he took biopsies of tumors before the hyperthermia and after, and then he looked at them with an electron microscope. If you know how, you know, that really blows things up, so you're looking at a very, you know, you're looking at it inside the cell, you're looking at things. Anyway, what you see before the hyperthermia is that the cancer cell, as expected, has very few and sparse and shrunken down mitochondria, which is why it's not aerobically able to do aerobic metabolism. It's doing anaerobic. After the hyperthermia, you do a biopsy and you look at them, and the cell is plush with mitochondria all over the place. So what have you done? You've taken a cancer cell, which is in a defective, morbid mode, primitive mode, and you've brought it back to being a normal cell. Now it has the capabilities of engaging in aerobic metabolism, which means it'll upregulate all the appropriate enzymes, downregulate all the negative enzymes, and go back to being a normal breast cell or a normal lung cell. So that's a pretty phenomenal thing. So Dr. Kobayashi says, cancer's not the enemy, society is. You know, so he says, what we got to do is get in there and look at the cancer cell as the prodigal son and bring it back. And that's what he does with the hyperthermia. So it's pretty amazing. And he's been doing this for, I guess, 30 years. So I really like that idea.
Well, he's going to get a lot more practice now since Fukushima is irradiating the country. I'm sure cancer is going to go crazy in Japan.
Oh, I know.
We're talking with Dr. Thomas Lodi, of the founder of the Oasis of Healing Clinic in Mesa, Arizona, a fascinating science lesson here in the mechanics of cancer. So you're saying that the Japanese clinics don't go quite as high in the temperature with hyperthermia treatment as the Germans do. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what length of time do they keep you? Is there a comparison of that?
Well, in I'm not sure how long they'll keep you up in Germany. In Japan, he keeps you up 2 hours. So it takes about an hour to get you there, 2 hours you stay up, and then an hour you go down. So it's about a four-hour process.
Do they use mistletoe as they do in Germany? And do you use mistletoe?
So that's the one here that we are, you know, we have a hard time getting and a hard time using. There's that, and then there's one other one I'm forgetting what it's called.
Well, they use dendritic injections in Germany. Do you use those as well?
Yeah. Well, no, we don't use them. We don't use them because here's the thing. Dendritic cells are, 80% of them are really in the liver. And what dendritic cells are is they're really what are called antigen-presenting cells. They're going to grab a cancer cell and present it to the T cells. And the T cells will then become, they kind of become assassins. Now they're tuned into, and they know which, who the enemy is. So, you know, a T cell that becomes a natural killer cell like that can be floating down the bloodstream, and if it sees a big, fat, juicy bacteria, it's going to go right around it because it's not after that. It's been turned into a sniper. It's a sniper. It only wants to go after the one type of cell. So without these dendritic cells, which are antigen-presenting cells, you can't turn on the immune system. You know, you can, and so that's the importance of dendritic cells. So what we do is we rely on freeing up the liver and using our own innate dendritic cells. And we do that through fasting and cleansing and all that. I don't use exogenous dendritic cells. I haven't found it necessary. And we get very high responses with natural killer cells and T cells and stuff like that. So we don't really, at this point, need it. I'm not saying it's not useful, but we haven't found it necessary at this point.
Well, and I do have to ask this question. How does the cost of your treatment in Mesa compare to that of, say, Germany, Japan, Mexico?
You know, I'm not sure what Germany charges or Mexico, really. I know that for us, it really depends on how much of the program and whether or not the person has insurance. But the program, if someone were to come from outside of the country and had no insurance and all that, then it usually runs about $5,000 a week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's comparable to the Oasis of Hope in Tijuana.
Oh, is that what they charge you?
Yeah, that's for living in and being fed and the whole thing.
Right. Yeah, we give the only thing we don't provide is the housing, but we have we have realtors, and they're around here. There are lots of studio apartments for $400 or $500 a month, and not expensive. So, but everything else, all the food, and we teach people how to prepare food. See, the most important thing we teach people is here you have this earth suit. You have this body that allows you to get around on the planet. What is it made of? How does it work? What does it need? How do you take care of it? That's one thing we don't learn. And you would think in a primary education that you would leave high school knowing how to take care of your body. But you don't. You don't. You rely on guys with white coats who aren't going to take care of it. They're just going to poison it and feed you into the medical industrial complex. And that's all it is. So what we do is we actually empower people. And our real goal is when you leave us, you no longer will ever need another doctor again. Because really, doctors don't heal. You know, if you come into a surgeon's office with a big gash on your hand, all he can do is bring the edges together with a needle and thread. You know, you've got to heal it. So healing comes from within. And we teach you how to maximize that ability to heal. And
well, how do you do that? What is the key? I noticed you do use enemas and other forms of cleanse.
Well, colonics. Well, yeah, cleaning out. Number one, you know, if you're going to remodel your house, the first thing you do is get rid of all the old stuff. You know, So you get rid of the garbage so that the immune system, like I said, remember the immune system, so it's not working on maintenance, on oil spills and toxins. It can work on defense. So you get rid of all the toxins. You clean out the body with colonics, lymphatics, deep tissue massage, rebounding, exercise, we teach how to do that, chelation, and then fasting and cleansing, green juice feasts for 21 days where you do nothing but drink 4, 5, 6 quarts of fresh green juice, and that's what we call that a feast, not a fast, because you're getting
4, 5, 6 quarts a day
you're not
of
eating.
Green juice?
You're not eating, and you've got to.
You don't eat solid food, you just do the green juice.
Right.
How long do you do that for?
21 days, 21,
oh my
30
God.
Days. Yeah. And what happens is your body is totally, you've changed the water in the aquarium. Listen, if you've got an aquarium and the fish are sick, the veterinarian's not going to say, bring me a fish. He's going to say, bring me a cup of the water. I'll tell you what's wrong with those fish.
Yeah.
Okay? So it's the same thing. If you don't change the water in the aquarium, it doesn't matter what kind of medicine you drop in there. They're going to continue to get sick. So
now, does insurance, do any American insurance companies cover your treatments?
They only cover the chemo part. They won't cover ozone. They won't cover, you know, food. Now, we teach people what food is, what's the appropriate. And the other big part of Stop Making Cancer is not only cleaning out, but providing the appropriate raw materials necessary for your body to rebuild healthy, vibrant cells. Okay, so if you're putting in French fries and burgers, that's the material you're giving your body to make new cells. It can't do it. It's going to make defective cells.
So you're saying you don't have a McDonald's franchise in the lobby of your place there?
Way beyond that. No,
I'm just kidding. Thomas Lodi, superb. I want you to consider coming back. If you would, I won't put you on the spot. I will write your office. You have a tremendous amount to teach about. We really didn't even get past cancer. I'd like to know actually the routine in your place, and which you can't tell me in 2 minutes. You've got a website, Oasis and oasisofhealing.com, oasisofhealing.com. Some of the articles there are breasts, broccoli, and cancer, which I was going to talk to you about today. We didn't get to it. Is salt essential or harmful? Why the sun does not cause cancer? Excuse me. If you'd like to talk about those, Dr. Lodi, I'll give you another hour and let me know when. Next week would be fine, but that'll be up to you.
I'm going to Thailand the week after, so it'd be nice. I would love to talk next week.
All right, next week we can do it. You're on for that. As you know, I've had my own odyssey with cancer here. Thankfully, I haven't had it. I got to tell you, after 12 people looked at the X-ray, they decided it was not in the lung, which they first said they were. Do you ever do surgery there?
No, but we use surgeons if necessary, but only under certain situations, which I could explain to you at another time.
Well, you'll do that next week. We'll have you back next week, Dr. Thomas Lodi of the Oasis of Healing Clinic in Mesa, Arizona. Thank you so much for your hour, and we'll have another one next week on the Green Power and Wellness Show. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening in. We'll put the URL for this out, and we'll have it on Facebook. And we'll see you next week, again, with Dr. Thomas Lodi. Take care.
Thank you.
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost, and so we went digging.